on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Hello and good evening and welcome to this week's Orient Hour on Phoenix 98 FM. I'm Trevor Singfield and in the studio with me tonight is Lee Boyce. How are you tonight, Lee?
Yeah, all good, Trev, good.
So hopefully by the magic for the telephone, we should have Steve on the end of the line. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Trevor. Hello, Lee. Good evening, listeners. And thanks to Andy Gilson for the previous hour's summer tunes. Lee and Trevor, who were in the studio for that, already warmed up. But we still have much more to discuss ahead of what's going to be a very busy couple of months for Leighton Orient Football Club. We've got who goes, who stays, who arrives, both, of course, in terms of players and also coaches. Kenny Jackett hasn't formally appointed a second-in-command yet. The new manager, of course, is still attracting great interest. And to get another insight into his style and character, we've got someone who knows him as well as anyone, Luther Blissett, who played with Kenny in those Watford glory years, was then joint manager and later joint first team coach with him as well. Luther's been speaking to Dave Victor and we'll hear that interview shortly and then reflect on what he had to say. We'll look at a couple of the playoff finals from the weekend maybe. Now we know that we won't be seeing Morecambe at Brisbane Road next season. They've gone up, but we will see Newport again, who really didn't get the breaks in that Wembley playoff final. And I'm sure I'm not the only one fascinated by the rise of Brentford, a team, remember, who we were famously beating at Griffin Park, what, 7 or 8 years ago, but who will next season be playing in the Premier League. I wonder if there are any lessons there for a club like the O's. Lots of news as well from the club, all on the website, if you missed any, about playing kit. The new shirts have been unveiled for next season. No braces, but what Orient kits have we loved or not loved down the years? And pre-season games, new investors, a Memorial Day next month at the club, and just in the last few hours, actually, news of a senior international call-up for one of our players. We've got news, too, of financial support for an Old Orient and Charlton player, too, from Lee. So we better get going. One quick one before we hear from Luther, for both of you, and that's about, really, I suppose, all the positivity about the appointment of Kenny Jackett. That's been done since we three were last together on the programme. Last time we were together, we were looking forward or not looking forward to the last game of the season up at Salford, which turned out to be pretty much of an anticlimax. The mood was a bit dismal, but what do you think about the effect that appointment's had, Trevor?
Yeah, it's virtually united the fan base, which you, since the modern age of social media, you never thought would happen, to be perfectly honest. So yeah, it's I'm delighted that they've got Kenny Jackett and whoever swung the deals, Matt Porter and co, they've done a fabulous job. But yeah, no, we can't complain.
No, I don't think many are complaining, and as you say, that says something in this day and age. But Lee, were you beginning to feel at the end of the season that the support among the fans was becoming a little bit fragmented and a bit divisive?
I think it was, Steve. I think it was just lack of, like, sort of a planning going forward. Everyone just wanted to know who was coming in, like sort of what players were staying and all that, to sort of give us some positivity for next year. Of course, Kenny Jackett was probably the only manager to come in who would 100% unite the fan base. And at the moment, the positivity is flying around everywhere.
It is. Well, we have a lot more to say about it ourselves, but let's get another view about him from someone who knows him very well. Here's Dave Victor with his special guest, Luther Blissett.
Well, Luther, thank you so much for joining us. Obviously, you know that the Orient supporters are very excited with Kenny Jackett being the new manager. And you probably know Kenny better than most because you've played with him and you've known him as a coach and a manager. Can I start with him as a player first, if I may? I can remember covering Watford back in the late 80s and being in the old press room. And there were pictures on the wall. There was a picture of you, of course, John Barnes, and Kenny Jackett. And I think that reflects just to what an important player he was at Vicarage Road.
I think the biggest thing that struck me about Kenny when he started, because I remember it's one of his first games for when he was sort of drafted into the first team, where we played a pre-season game, Exeter it was, and he was a 17-year-old lad that that joined him with the first team for the sort of first time and on a game. And he just looked completely at home. He looked as if he'd always been part of the first team, apart, and being a first team player. He just did whatever was needed to be done and did it really well. And that was, I suppose that's what sums what Kenny is very good at. You know, he understands what it takes to be a good player, all the attributes that you need to be a consistent and a top-level performer, and he's done that all his career. You could depend on him. Give him a job to do, you depend on Kenny, no problem. You said mark somebody, and that person, you wouldn't see them in the game again. He was just exceptional at that.
And now I write, he had an ambition to be a coach from a very early age.
Yes, yeah, he did. I think because of the environment we grew up in, his dad used to do a little bit as well, I believe. And, you know, I think that's where he got that. I suppose you want to be like your dad and be able to do all the things that he did. And, he's just very good at it. Again, as I said, Kenny understood all the things that he needed to be a good footballer. And with his abilities and his understanding of all of that, you know, the coaching really was second nature to him once he started going, and he could see what players needed and who perhaps at the young players would probably not make it, and he knew that from very early on, and I think there's some of the strengths that he's got.
And his career was unfortunate, of course, ended by injury, and that meant that he was able to focus as a coach, and that was at Watford.
It was. He learned a lot from Tom Waller, who was the youth team coach that Kenny grew up with, and from Tom Woolley, who's ex Orient man himself, he was just brilliant, Kenny. You know, he picked up all the things that Tom was obviously taught him while he was playing, but then the other little things that it would talk to Tom at a different level once he started to get involved with the coaching, and you know, it blossomed from there. He always had good people around him. Graham Taylor was always a very good person you could talk to and would help to guide you, but he wouldn't spoon feed you things. You know, you had to learn and explore yourself, and Kenny did that naturally anyway.
And you worked with Kenny when he was a coach, didn't you, Luther?
That's right, yeah. We took over as sort of joint managers, I suppose, of the first team. After the first year, we went back in 96-97, and Kenny, you know, I could completely understand what Kenny was about. Just as he was a player, all the attributes he had as a player, he had those same attributes, understanding, knew the key things that players had to perform, and always felt, you know, as long as players gave 100%, you could forgive them the mistakes and stuff they made as long as they did that. And that's what we all grew up with, and he tries to put that into all his players. And then it's the ability that the players have is then the thing that elevates them above other people. And it was always about team. It was all about you as an individual playing your part. And these are the things that Kenny brings to every club he's been to. And I think you look at his track record, where he's been, QPR, and Swansea, Wolves, Portsmouth, and wherever. You know, he's been, that's the sort of man he is. You get 100% from him. His teams are organised. And, you know, they know how to go about winning football matches.
And what is the Kenny way in terms of, is it a very direct approach? That's what a lot of Portsmouth supporters are talking about. Or is he flexible in terms of his formation? Do they relate to the players?
I mean, the thing is, organise yourself, and Kenny being a defender himself, and even from it, he will make sure defensively he's got a strong defence, and if then turning that defence into attack. I think if you have the right players, then you can be far more adventurous on the way you play the game. And when Graham arrived, Graham recognised that he had some very quick, very talented players at the front of the team. And so we built the team around getting the ball to those players, you know, from the halfway line onwards, so they would go and do the things that they do best. Rather than us having to concentrate on being an outstanding defending team, we made the opposition have to defend, which helped defensive qualities of all the team, because then we would be compact and we could do that defending together.
And knowing him so well as a player and as a coach, what are your sort of standout memories and maybe even some funny stories about Kenny?
Well, I think, first thing, when you have a left-footed player such as Kenny, you know, his distribution and passing of the ball is fantastic. He's not the quickest, but he thinks and reads the game very well, positions himself in good position. I played against Kenny, England versus Wales at Wembley, and, you know, once or twice I thought, here, I'm going to score here, and then suddenly, because he knows me like I know him, and he, you know, he managed to get in there and get a toe in to block it or deflect it wide and stuff like that at crucial times. And when I did get above him in headers, he used his body well to make sure I couldn't get the power and the direction I wanted on headers and that. So I think they're the qualities that he has, and he tries to get that, those little details into his players, so they understand that you don't always have to be, you know, because we're not always going to be operating at 100% and being able to deliver that, you know, 10 out of 10 performance. Is between that sort of 6.5 and 9, say 10, is making sure that you can always find some way of delivering on a day when, you know, you or the team is not performing well. And I think Kenny's organisational skills are, you know, on a par to what Graham Taylor's was, because, you know, that was the person he learned from, and along with the insights and the certain things that Tom Whalley gave him. And I think Kenny is just, yeah, I've got a lot of time, a lot of admiration, and, you know, and I've really been impressed and pleased the way he's gone about his career. And he's been a very successful coach, manager, pretty much everywhere he's been.
Of course he has, you know, earning silverware with the likes of Millwall and, of course, Wolverhampton Wanderers. Are you surprised that Kenny's dropped to League Two with the O's?
Not really. The thing is, you know, jobs are very difficult things to come by at times. When they become available, it's not always at the ideal time that you like, or you know, that job you think, yeah, that would be the ideal one that I have. But you have to be open-minded and think, is there a job that I can go and do at that club? And Kenny has always, you know, looked at things that way. Is it a job that you can achieve something and you know, excel in? Yes. And I think Orient is a great place for him to come and do that. I mean, I remember the first time I ever went to Leighton Orient, actually, I was at school, and we played, what was it, a cup tie there. We played a cup tie at Leighton Orient. I'm trying to remember what cup it was. I would have been about, what, 16, I think. I'd have been 15 or 16 then, and we played in a cup final there. We won 3-1, I think, and I scored twice. And so that was my first ever visit to a proper football ground. And that was something special. So Orient has always been something, a place in my mind that has held something a bit special, having played that little bit there. Laurie Cunningham started there as well, which is another amazing thing for me, because I admired and, you know, he was one of my idols. So I think Kenny will be a great success at Orient. And the fans, you know, fans listen to things that other fans say about this and the other, but you can only cut your cloth to what you have. And that's something Kenny is very good at. If you have, you know, the strength of what your team are, that's what he will try and play to. And he won't try and make something out of what he's unable to do with the material he's got in front of him. So, you know, he'll always give 100%.
And what's his relationship with the supporters going to be like, Luther?
Kenny will be open. He'll talk to the supporters in the right way. You know, he'll be open with them about what needs to, you know, where the club is at, where the players are at. And the same as he is with the players. He won't feed them a cock and bull story at all or anything. He'll tell them straight how it is. And if a player's not doing it, just like we grew up knowing the manager or the coach would say to you, you need to rediscover that form that got you in a team in the first place. And you'd be told that. And I think that's very, very important. And the fans need to understand that he's somebody that he will tell them how it is.
He's managed at very different levels. He had success at Swansea, of course. And in many ways, he's laid the foundation for what was to follow down there.
He did. And, you know, a lot of people, and I think Swansea supporters need to sometimes just think about that, because they talk about, you know, managers have done this. But Kenny was the one that went to Swansea and actually built that base for that club to go and then, you know, ended up in the Premier League within, I think it was about 3 years of him, no longer being there. So he is very good at organising the team, the club, and his players. And, you know, you have to be patient at times. And, you know, Kenny will show that, you know, if you give him the time and give him that support, he will deliver.
How versatile is he in terms of formations? I know that in recent seasons, certainly last season, one of the frustrations for the Orient supporters was that there seemed to be a rigid 4-3-3, no matter who the manager was, actually. Is Kenny more flexible than that? What will be his preferred formation, do you think?
Kenny will play the formation that will get the best out of the players that he has available. That is something that he has grown up with being aware of and having played at Watford. You know, we have played different systems, although people think you've always played 4-4-2. No, we haven't. We've played different systems. And Kenny does the same wherever he goes. What is needed, depending on what players you have at your disposal, that's what you have to play. And I think that is a strength that has sustained him in his managerial career to date. And that's why he's had the success he's had. He sees that, and when he needs to change it to go a certain way, he will.
Luther, I'm so grateful for your time. Thank you very much. Just one more question for me, if you don't mind. Do you think Kenny Jackett and Leighton are into a good match?
I think so. Sure. You know, as I said, as you said yourself, you know, Leighton are in it at a place now where, you know, the place is more stable now than it's been for a long while. And you need somebody now that has been there and done it at the various levels, and he'll know and understand the players that he's got, he'll know what he needs, and he will get them where they need to be, no doubt about it. He will get them, I mean, if it's promotion you're looking for. As long as the players are available for him to do so, you know, he will put them in a position where that can become a reality.
And I'm sure you'll be watching on with great interest. We wish him every success, and thank you so much for taking your time here on the Orient Hour. It is very much appreciated. Thank you.
No problem. No doubt I'll be on the phone to you guys to say, look, I'm coming down to have a look and see how you're progressing. So you can guarantee that as the season goes on.
Fantastic. We look forward to that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care now. Bye-bye. Yes.
There we are. Luther Blissett, former playing and coaching colleague of Kenny Jackett at Watford. We'll certainly look forward to seeing him down at Brisbane Road to check on how our new manager is doing. Some very nice comments about the Orient there as well. Apologies for a bit of noise on the line if you heard any, but thanks as ever to Dave Victor for the interview. So I suppose you might expect to hear nice things from someone like Luther about him. His verdict, I think he'll be a great success at Orient. But Trevor, he couldn't have been much more supportive, could he?
No, he spoke very well, and he knows a good little bit about the Orient, which I like when people come on to talk about us. And saying about Kenny's strengths or weaknesses, which it appears he hasn't got many weaknesses yet, but I'm sure the O's fans are fine. Some, they're good like that. Luther said that we would find him a straight-talking manager, which I like. I always found Justin was like that, playing to the strengths of what he's got in front of him. And he also said, like, he's always 100% trying to obviously win football matches like all managers, but Gary Alexander spoke exactly the same the way Luther did. So you got it from two different angles, a fellow that played under him at Millwall and then somebody who's known him for a long, long time, like he's talking about when he played at Wembley against him. So I think we can take Luther's words very kindly and quite warming, to be perfectly honest, Steve.
Yeah, that those who missed hearing Gary Alexander, that was on the Kenny Jackett special, which we put out soon after he was appointed, and that's still available, by the way, online if you Google it. And it was interesting. Gary Alexander had no particular reason to big him up. He could have said anything. In fact, we didn't like to mention it at the time, but in that second Millwall playoff final that Kenny took them to, the one we talked about, at Wembley, Gary was actually left on the bench for the whole 90 minutes, so he might have had every reason to bear a grudge. Apparently at the after-match party about 3 o'clock in the morning, Gary was still walking around saying to Kenny, I'm ready, boss, I'm ready. But he was another one who, as you say, has only good things to say about him. We'll come on to a couple of supporters from other clubs in a minute. But Lee, the one thing that both Luther and Gary Alexander didn't go to in any great depth was this question of the style of play. Now, are you expecting to see a much more direct style than we have in the past season, maybe the past two seasons in particular?
I think if you look back at Wolves and Millwall, they wasn't direct under him. They tried to play football, and they did try and sort of attack quickly. And I think there's a thin line between attacking quickly from the back and direct. Like, you know, I think... You can go more direct when the pressure's on you. When you're getting pressure from the fans, you end up going a bit more direct. I think that's, from what I'm looking from the outside, I think that's what happened at Portsmouth. It was like he started getting pressure and the team started going a bit more direct. I'd have thought he's got pretty much a blank canvas to build a squad that he wants, that I'd have thought would he'd want to play football.
And if you've been brought up at Watford, which he was for a very long time as a player and a coach, I mean, he was there from about the age of 8, so he was there for 20 or more years. And at a time when Watford was so successful, I mean, if any younger listeners who don't remember this, Watford went from the fourth division to finish runners-up in the top division, the equivalent of the Premier League. They went into Europe playing with a fairly direct style. So, I mean, if you're brought up with that, at the very least, it's going to influence your thoughts about the game, isn't it?
Yeah. I think looking at Kenny Jackett, he looks like he's a manager that's evolved, sort of thing. So yeah, he understands going back to there, what direct football was for Watford and all that. And like I say, most teams or most managers will go back to direct football when they need to. But like I said, looking back on his managerial career, he looks like he's evolved from that, and can play other styles successfully.
Well, as you mentioned Portsmouth and Wolves there, let's just have a little listen to this, which is views of a couple of supporters from his previous clubs, Wolves and Portsmouth, about the style of play. These aren't people who are sort of ranters on social media. These are sensible people. A Wolves fan who I know said this, given that we won League One by a mile in his first season and did well in the Championship, most would regard it at that point as winning football rather than Route One or anything like that. I'd say he's a bit old school, but he had Kevin McDonald as a playmaker at Wolves and went through the midfield a lot, and two other nice mid-footballers in there as well. And a Portsmouth fan said on the surface he did pretty well, never finishing lower than eighth with two playoff disappointments. I was happy to give him time on the basis that we were generally progressing despite losing three key players. Personally, I didn't like much of the football. It was fairly primitive. The defenders weren't encouraged to play with the ball, and the attackers were expected to chase balls played in their general direction. But we were generally heading in the right direction, and eventually was hounded out. But the fact that after an initial bounce under the Cowleys, we just went on to lose half our remaining fixtures suggests it wasn't just about Kenny Jackett. And here's a summary. I think Orient supporters are right to be pleased, particularly if they don't like the tippy-tappy passing at the back with no end product. His football's the opposite of that, but can be effective. You might well end up with one or two of our Pompey cast-offs who'll probably do a good job at the League Two level. So there's a thought. Trevor, if we were to play a bit more direct, would that be such a bad thing in League Two anyway? Because there were clearly times when we were guilty of overplaying last season. If you remember when we had Ross on this programme, he even admitted that we were, a lot of the time, we were simply too slow at building up.
Well, yeah. I mean, when I managed to watch some of the playoff games and both, all the sides in there were quite direct. I mean, it's a fine line, direct football, or go back to the old crazy gang days where they absolutely levered it forward regardless. When it becomes long ball and it becomes winning football, then you'll see your defenders coming up more. It's all about confidence then, isn't it? So if you hit the ground running like we did in 2013-14 when we won 9 out of 10, whatever it was, we weren't playing great stuff at the start, but once you get winning games and you start producing some decent football. So that's probably the way I can see it going. If we sort of get into the top 5 or 6 and we start producing some decent stuff, then I think there'd be a nice happy medium of the fans wanting to see goals, wanting to see attacking football, and we'll take a bit of long ball stuff. I mean, we did overplay it last year, everybody knows that, but we just want to get back to winning football. And if we get it forward and we get some quick wingers and you go past people like the old days of Moses, and then you had Cox and previous that, Imade, Comforts, that's what you want to see, if we can get a bit of everything in there. But I think everywhere he's gone, it's been sort of pretty direct, hasn't it, Steve?
Yes, I think so. As I say, which is what you'd expect from his background, but also, as Lee said, I think it's probably evolved a little bit, and that he'll probably be quite pragmatic, because he will also have a good look at League Two and the clubs we're facing. It was very encouraging to hear after the appointment that one of the things he did when he was briefly out of the game after leaving Portsmouth was he studied literally every game he went to. He studied particular clubs and particular styles, and that included a number of League Two clubs. So I think we can assume he'll be pretty well clued up. And Lee, what the style comes down to, I mean, unless you're going to be Manchester City or Barcelona or somebody, I mean, it's a matter of winning football, isn't it? That's the key.
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, it's like the old saying, horses for courses, isn't it? I mean, look, you're saying about the 4-3-3 formation last year. That appeared to be the formation we had for the players that suited that formation. Like I say, this year we've got a bit of a more blank canvas, so hopefully we can get players in different positions that can change formations when needed.
Yeah. And a semi-serious point there made by our Pompey fan about going back to your old club for a player or two, which many managers do, of course. Older O's supporters will remember George Petchie, I'm sure, after he took over signing up so many of his old Crystal Palace players with great success. So we might as well move on to the question of recruitment. Lee, you've been involved at one or two clubs on the recruitment side. Do you think it's a big problem at the moment that not just that we have so many gaps in the playing squad, but we still have 5 players who may or may not sign? I believe the date is June the 30th, the actual deadline when you've got to say yes or no to a new contract. And so we're waiting on Vigouroux, Dan Happy, who it's rumoured may sign, but that's not confirmed, plus Brophy, Johnson and Wilkinson, who we don't know about. Is it a problem at the moment?
I think it's a problem when you haven't got enough players like sort of settled in that squad. But saying that, we've, like I say, Kenny Jackett come in from a different level. That could actually work in our favour this year. I mean, June the 30th is when their contracts end. I think they were given 28 days. I mean, we had it last season with Satoria and Marv, where we just kept hanging on, and let them. I think this time we've got to turn around and say, like, 28 days or whatever the date is. If they haven't signed, right, see ya. Like, you know, I mean, we'll get somebody else in. Because as good as them players were last year, none of them are absolute weldies sort of thing, like, you know what I mean, or guaranteed to go a league above. So for them to hold us to ransom this year, I think he's wrong. We've got to turn the incentive around and take control of the situation. And if they haven't signed after the 28 days or whatever the date was that was given, then they go and then we start again.
Trevor, would you be happy with that, even if it meant people like Johnson and Wilkinson, the two top scorers, going?
No, I agree entirely with what Lee said about no club can hold us to ransom, because Christian Wheeler, he was talking about how many clubs had their released figures out, and so many clubs in League Two have released loads of players. So it's sort of a buyer's market, isn't it? So if you get offered a contract like Craig Clay did, and he's bit their hand off, then these other players may have better offers. We don't know, but well, it's a dangerous game if you're a professional footballer, isn't it? You know, so yeah, a lot of work to be done in that that department, isn't it?
Yes, we saw a sight of the list of released players from just from League Two clubs, and as you said, it was enormous. I mean, a minimum of 10, 12 players from every club virtually, some of whom have re-signed, some of whom have moved on. But as you say, no, there's a lot of players out there looking for work. Well, let's just look at what we've definitely got. We've got a squad of 12, I've worked out, if that's any consolation. Two goalkeepers. Actually, I must, just before that, we must say congratulations to one of the people who is in the squad. I don't know if anybody has looked at the website just this afternoon, but Hector Kyprianou has just today been called up to the Cyprus senior team for the first time. Great effort on his part. In fact, I think he's only got to get to about 8 senior caps and he'd become our second most capped Orient player while still at the club. Joby, of course, was top with about 22, 23 caps while an Orient player. So great news for Hector and a big boost for the club as well, especially for one of our own who's come through from the academy. So Hector is one of 6 midfield players who we've definitely got. We're very well stocked there with Cisse and Hector, plus Craig Clay, who, as you say, has signed a new contract, Danny Kemp, Matt Young, who had a promising little cameo in that last game of the season, and Papadopoulos, a youngster also given a first pro contract. So 6 midfield players, 2 goalkeepers, Sam Sargent and 1 youngster, 3 defenders, Adam Thompson, Sweeney and Ogie, who also have not a lot of experience between them. And then our attack at the moment consists of Raul Sotiriou. So the good news is we've got 12 players. We can get a team out once Adam Thompson is fit and 6 midfielders. But there are some pretty big gaps elsewhere, aren't there?
Yeah, there is, isn't there? So unless Kenny, because we haven't seen sight of him since the big fanfare when he signed, he's locked away with Martin Ling drinking espressos so they're coming out their ears, we better get a little bit of a move on, better we? Funny enough, somebody was fishing on our WhatsApp today saying, oh, no signings yet, no signings yet. But, you know, it's, I mean, the ball's barely been put away, have they, from the Wembley playoffs? No, it's likely alluded to. It's a blank canvas for Kenny, and it could be exciting times.
Yeah. Lee, fullbacks is I suppose one of the most obvious, and fullbacks and the attack, depending on whether anybody like Johnson and Wilkinson re-signs, are the biggest gaps, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think like last season we struggled with the right back position all season, despite having two players. Yeah, I mean, well, just looking at the list now, and it's like I think it's problems all over. I mean, you're looking at the list now, and you've got Kyprianou and Kemp. Ideally, you look at them two, and you build sort of the middle around, or build the team around them two. But they're not going to play in a 4-4-2 sort of thing. They're not going to be a middle two. So if you're going to play a middle two, you're sort of looking around there and thinking, well, you've not got no real midfield players either. So yeah, there's a lot. But like I said, like we just said, that's quite good for Kenny Jackett. If under different situation, different manager, I'd probably be a lot more. Well, I would be a lot more worried about it. But I don't know. Like I say, it's a blank canvas for him. There's a lot of good things going on. So let's just hold the faith on that one, I think.
And he'd be someone who, just from his experience of different clubs and people he knew, will have a lot of contacts in the game, won't he?
Well, he lives and breathes football, according to it, and he would know so many different players. And if you've been successful with him before, and maybe you are dropping down slightly, then and you know his standards expected, then get them players in. Could be lower wages to sort of get a few bigger hitters further up the pitch who are going to deliver the goods if we have to start paying for forwards.
Yeah, yeah. Lee, any thoughts on or guesses on those 5 who still haven't re-signed, whether any or more of them will?
I think the rumours that Happy is going to, I think possibly, I think, well, I said from the start, I thought Happy would stay.
Yeah.
To be truthful, I don't know. I don't know what the others are thinking. I'd have thought it's a no-brainer, like with the ambition we're showing at the moment. But each to their own, isn't it? Sort of thing. If they go, they go.
Yeah, I suppose one of the problems, if you we were signing people who were League One ready, and we got people like Vigouroux and Johnson in, and if you sign players who are League One ready, then League One clubs might fancy them as well if you don't make the jump yourselves. So we have to wait and see, but we understand that by June the 30th, at the very latest, we should know more, and we'll be waiting impatiently to see who's come in before then. So we got new investors on board as well, heavy American influence. I don't know whether that will slightly increase the playing budget, but certainly that in the longer term is very good news. And anybody who didn't see it or who wasn't very interested in the slight restructuring of Eagle Investments Company, which is the main shareholder club of the club, Kent Teague has effectively wiped £2 million in loans off to the club. So that's the sort of commitment these people are putting in, saying, oh, don't worry about that £2 million that you owe me. We'll forget about that. Now, just one more question on recruitment. I'm fascinated by the rise of Brentford and the way they've done it in reaching the Premier League. I'm sure people who are listening to this, some of you were at Griffin Park in 2013 when we won 2-0 for our eighth successive win to start the season in League One. Okay, Brentford finished that season one place above us, and we know what then happened at Wembley to us, and they were getting slightly bigger attendances. But I would have said, Trevor, we were effectively on a par with Brentford as a club at that stage, weren't we?
Yeah, I presume so, because we've generally been messing around in the lower divisions for years, both the clubs, really. They were always a lower division club from when I started going, and the first time I went to Brentford probably was about 83, so when we got relegated.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I mean, it's a nice traditional football club. I mean, it really enjoyed the old ground, obviously, with four pubs on the corners. Always created a good atmosphere, healthy rivalry, some nice, some not so nice occasionally. But that's a London derby, because I'm one of the people who likes London derbies instead of Essex derbies. So that's a little bugbear of mine. But, no, they've done very, very well, haven't they? And so we sit here green with envy, to be perfectly honest, because a case of a spot kick, they went up to the Championship and we didn't. Would we have stayed there? Who knows, under the regime that come in. But yes, new ground, not that I like it, not that I've been in it, but looking at it, I don't like it. The seats are a bit different, but unlike you, Steve, I'm not really up on their sort of buy low and sell high sort of thing.
Well, what they've done is, they seem to have done from the outside, is two main things. First, they put an awful lot of faith in what's called the Moneyball style of recruitment of players and coaches. That's based on the book and film of the American Baseball Club, who concentrated everything on data and analysis in a way that hadn't really been done before in this country. And secondly, in the transfer market, that's rather than just relying on your old-fashioned scouts who go to watch a player or look at the videos or whatever. And secondly, in the transfer market, what I meant by that buy cheap and sell high, they recruit players who they think will have a big sell-on value if they need to sell them. And one of the papers did a list this week of some of the players they bought and sold. Just listen to this. This is the profit they made on each of these players. Ollie Watkins, who Dean Smith took to Aston Villa because he knew him from Brentford, profit of £24 million. Ben Rama, who went to West Ham, profit of £18 million. Mopay, the striker, who they sold to Brighton, £18 million profit. Ezri Konsa, they got from Charlton, defender, sold him to Villa, £9 million profit. Andre Gray to Watford, £11 million profit. And so it goes on. Now, you might say, you sell your best players like that, that's not the way to get promotion. But then what they do, they find a cheaper replacement for all of those players. Look what they've done this season. Ivan Toney from Peterborough, who apparently played 10 minutes in the Premier League for Newcastle at one stage. Newcastle said, no, we don't want him. So he went off, cost £5 million from Peterborough. He's just scored 33 goals for them, including the first goal at Wembley in the playoff. How much is he worth now? So that's another point. You know, you might say, selling your best players like club like Orient have really done over the years, well, that's not a long-term strategy. But Brentford have done it and have got themselves into the Premier League. Lee, I wonder, did you come across many recruitment staff or scouts who had view on this concentration on data as opposed to the old-style scouts who just trust their own judgment?
I think a lot of clubs now, especially academies, are going like down that route. You've still got the old school scouts, but they are doing a lot more data and like analysts and all that. And you're saying about that. I mean, I think one of the things that they said to Kenny Jackett when we got him was that we've got three analysts like already, and that he said that's one more than Portsmouth had. So that sort of says as well, are we going down that road that Brentford had done? Just going back to Brentford, I mean, Brentford's rise was, 7-8? It was patiently done. That was the thing. There was no panic like last year when they imploded at the end and missed out completely. No panic. Just carried on. Sold two strikers, bought another player in, carried on and got their just rewards. I think that's the way it is all going forward now. It is all about analysts and statistics and things like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, it's not the Brentford hour, it's the Orient hour, but maybe some food for thought there. We might have to get our old friend Steve Foster back on the programme to give us his views on some of it. So let's look a bit further ahead. We've got coming up in only 3 weeks' time, the fixtures for the new season announced. Always a good day to look forward to. It's Thursday, June the 24th, if you haven't got that in your diary. We know, with one exception, who we'll be playing and where we'll be going next season. We'll be going back to Sutton, the National League champions, who've had to tear up their artificial pitch. And the other National League promoted team could be anywhere geographically, from Bromley to Torquay to Hartlepool. They've got those first playoff games this weekend, like Hartlepool against Bromley. But it won't be decided until the final on June the 20th, so we've got to wait for that. And we knew already, of course, that teams coming down from League One are some very old southern rivals of ours, like Bristol Rovers, Swindon, Northampton, and then Rochdale. And what we now know, of course, after the weekend, is that Morecambe beat Newport 1-0 in our playoff final, having been second favourites to get relegated back to the National League. Morecambe will now play in League One for the first time in their history. Trevor, I think we have to say well done to Derek Adams for that, wasn't it? It's quite an achievement.
Yeah, he's done rather well, didn't he? I mean, he was always subject to social media speculation amongst Orient fans, but I thought I'd do doff my cap to him with his post-match interview where he was asked about the penalty and he said, well, that's sort of karma for getting three of our blokes sent off. I mean, not many managers come out and say that after you just got promoted, do they? So that probably shows the character of the man and... Yeah, maybe the Orient missed out on him. Who knows?
Yeah, I was surprised. I clearly had no real knowledge of what he was like. I don't know if you watched that final, but he was really calm through most of the game on the touchline. I mean, I thought I just had the impression that he was one of those who'd be charging around, flapping his arms about and complaining at every decision. But I thought he was really dignified and so on. A bit of a surprise, though, that they beat Newport, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah, but one game of football at Wembley can decide anything, can't it? I mean, that's the lottery of the playoffs.
Sure. Now, I know you lads like an away trip, and so, as I say, we'll get six different teams next season, as we do every season, which makes it a bit more interesting. Anywhere you're looking forward to visiting, or not looking forward to?
Well, as long as it ain't Bromley, the last one. I mean, we've already got Sutton. I don't want Bromley as well, but anyway, any of the others are all great.
Yeah, a couple of old favourites in there. We will enjoy a trip to Rochdale. Got a few pals up there. Anywhere in Lancashire we enjoy. It's Barrow. They're still they done well to stay in the second division, whatever you call it nowadays. It's League Two. But yeah, hopefully, if we do get a little run together, we can get some little cup ties where we can go somewhere else, because we're sort of a bit of samey old samey, the leagues, aren't they? Because I think two or three come down that we've been recently as well.
Yes, that's true. Swindon, well, a bit worrying perhaps for that Swindon and Northampton went up and came back down after one season, but that's not something we have to worry about quite yet. Lee, I think you said you maybe prefer the old Football League teams like Hartlepool and Torquay rather than these newcomers like Sutton and Bromley.
Yeah, I mean, me and Trev both singing from the same song sheet on that. It's like the old romance, isn't it, sort of thing. Like, you've got the memories of going up there and to all them grands, and it's nice to see proper football clubs in the Football League. I mean, good luck to the Harrogates and the Salfords and Suttons, but they don't get you excited, do they? Like, you know, I mean, to go away to them, do they?
Personally, I like to see Stockport come back, to be honest, Steve.
Yes, we have relatives who support Stockport, and so we followed them, and they've done terrifically well, actually coming up from the National League North, and on very good crowds. I mean, I think they were setting record crowds in the National League North. So their supporters stayed loyal to them, which was very good to see. So they'll be in there as well. And pre-season, we know that we can expect visits from West Ham and Gillingham. That's July the 13th and the 31st, those two. And in between, I think we can expect at least one game away to a non-league club, as we normally do. And talk of a Scottish trip, I believe. Have you heard any rumours about that?
Well, we've all heard rumours about it, yeah. Matt Porter actually said that a UK tour, didn't he? So, yeah, it's a bit of a bugbear of mine that there must be some concrete plans here and not to sort of put anything out to fans like myself who like to go. I mean, we've been Portugal, Belgium and places like that. I don't know what the secretivity is of all this. If we're going to Scotland, the Scottish Parliament allowed the games to go ahead because I think they're a couple of weeks behind on all the other things, then why not let the fans feed it out? If we can't go, we can't go, can we? But it'd be great if they did, because from my small fraternity of pals, there'd be a good few people that would be rushing to go, to be honest.
Really? You think we get a few fans up there?
Oh, most definitely, yeah. Let's
hope that comes off, because it's probably been a while. So some dates to look forward to then, and another one the club has just announced for a nice idea, a Memorial Day, Sunday, July the 4th, to remember all those members of the Orient family who've sadly been lost in the past year or so of the pandemic. The ground's going to be open from 11:30 on that Sunday for 3 hours, and after 1:15, Alan Comfort, the club chaplain, our old winger, will take a service. And if you'd like to send in photos, voice recordings or requests for particular music, you can do all that via the club website, which is a nice idea. And Lee, you wanted to say something about fundraising for Paul Linger, the old Charlton and Orient midfielder from the late 90s. What's the story there?
Yeah, Paul Linger, as you know, we signed from Charlton, and he wasn't with us long before he moved on to Brighton, played a handful of games, local lad. He was diagnosed with cancer a couple of years ago. Coming towards the end of last year, he thought he'd beaten it, but he's come back with a vengeance, and now it is literally a matter of time. The thing with Paul is, Paul's got two sons, and the youngest one, Frankie, 5 years old. Frankie tragically lost his mum recently as well, so he's 5 years old. He's going to be losing both his parents. There was a golf day was arranged, which Cole Griffiths was part of, arranging that. That was arranged for Saturday, last Saturday. When I spoke to him, I said to him, like, has the club, anyone been to the club? And I spoke to some of the family, and they said, no. And they said, like, they don't remember him, sort of thing. And I thought, do you know what? I thought that's quite heartbreaking, because I thought we talk about one of our own, and once an O, Orient, always an O, and Orient family. And I thought, this fella hasn't got long left. Look, even though he's been played for us a few times, hasn't got long left. And his young son is going to have lost both his parents, like I said, at a very, very young age. So I spoke to Danny Macklin, who's very supportive, when we're putting together a GoFundMe page to just try and raise some money. Like, you know what I mean? Just try and raise a little bit of money for Paul to spend with some quality time with both his boys. I think his oldest boy, Alfie, is I think about 20. But like I say, Frankie's 5 years old. Not going to really have a lot of memories of his dad. I'd like to Give the young lad a memory that Orient fans do stick to their word. Once you are an O, you're always an O, and you'll always be part of the Orient family. So we're going to put this GoFundMe page together, try and raise some money, like I say, just to give him like, a few little memories, like I say, before the inevitable happens.
Excellent. Well said. That's a very nice idea. So it'll be a GoFunding page, which people can look up. I'm sure there'll be a mention on the website eventually, but otherwise a GoFunding and pooling and we'll get us there. In fact, I think Brighton supporters raised a certain amount of money in the past, didn't they? So that may even exist already. But yes, that will be good to hear. So keep us up to date with what's happening on that. Now, new kits. The new shirts have been unveiled for next season. No braces, which I think has disappointed some people, and a Day Glow yellow away kit. I don't know if anybody's seen the clip on social media of it was Peterborough, wasn't it, who were playing away in very similar yellow away kit, and the centre half passes the ball out to what he thinks is his left back on the touchline, which turns out to be a steward in a Dago yellow vest walking up and down the touchline. But what do we think of the new kits? Trevor, are you one of those who would have liked the braces back?
Yeah, well, the braces is my favourite kit because it's the time when I started going. So I think a lot of fans, whether you're old or young, I mean, you remember the first kits you see. But I'm a traditionalist as well. I like blues versus red type of scenario, you know, when you get a Sabutio set or something back in the day. But yeah, the modern day kits, it's sort of Marmite, isn't it? You're going to like it or hate it, aren't you? Red for the home, the Day Glow kit, well, dear me, that caused a stir on social media, didn't it? So yeah, no, traditionally I'd love to see the O's playing the braces forever, a bit like Airdrie played with the Chevron V. And so you can't go and step on them because that's another kit that I loved, what the Clapton Orient used to wear. And I think they wore that for, say, like 15, 16 years.
Wasn't there one season around about 1999 or so when we had that briefly, the Black V again? Then it came back for one game, didn't it? Was it Bromley at home?
Yeah.
We had a good win wearing it.
Yeah, we had the Bromley one. I should get Andy to do the commentary, shouldn't I? they did play with some of a semi V. I think it was about 2001, maybe. I think we played Portsmouth in the cup wearing it or something like that. It's around that area. So yeah, but no, the one they played in against Bromley was tremendous, and you can't knock that. That was kindly done by sponsors as well. So yeah, but the latest offering. I know why they've done it, because it's allegedly with younger fans, it's a big selling thing because you can go to your bike rides on it, you can go jogging in it if they're the orange or the luminous yellow. So it does appeal to that, and we know the club like marketing it, don't they? And, which is a shame.
Yeah. Lee, any favourites or the opposite?
Oh, I think the braces all day long, like, basically for the same reasons what Trev said. I can understand as much as I'd like to see that stay as a third kit, I can understand, obviously, that ain't going to generate money season after season. But, I think I'll leave it there.
Fair enough, all right. Well, I'll put in an anti-word for the one I didn't like, really, I think, was that checkerboard Croatia kit when we were pretending to be Croatia. I think that was another one that probably divided people, but got a bit of a thumbs down from me. There's a wonderful bit of nostalgia, by the way. If you go online to www.historicalfootballkits, historical with an A-L, footballkits.co.uk, you click on English League and then Leighton Orient or any other club, and it gives you an illustration of every kit, shirt, shorts and socks, dating back 100 years or more. So in our case, it gives you basically every Orient kit for almost 120 years. I genuinely don't really know how they've done it, because it can't all have been done by photographs, but it's a fantastic record. So do have a look at that if you've got a few minutes to spare one day. Historical football kits. .co.uk. Now we've just got time for a bit more history. Trevor, you went on the Orient Line walk that took place on Sunday, arranged by Steve Jenkins. For those who don't know, what's that all about?
Well, Steve's done this many years over sort of the bank holiday weekend. I've been on it, this is my second time now, because when I was previous times I couldn't go because I was on commitments of family holidays. But what's he done? Well, he hasn't made the walk up himself. It's another gentleman's name I haven't got. Made a walk of all the historical sites from Leighton Orient to Clapton Orient. So you you meet at Leighton Orient at 9:30 in the morning this time, and Steve walked us around the ground pointing out various bits which are unique to our football club and everything else. So outside the ticket office, for example, is a plaque about Leighton Orient. Then you go around, you visit the plaque for Laurie Cunningham. Then there's the park, we see Laurie. And then he marches us off towards Hackney Marshes, pointing out things along the way. One little bit before we did leave the O's, he points out where the McFaddens live, which is one of the guys who sadly gave his life in the Great War, which is mainly what this is for. Yeah, you head across Hackney Marsh and you head into Clapton. He points out where the houses where some of the players lived, and he points out the pub where all the club was founded. And midway you have a liquid refreshments. So we chose a Cheshire Arms, which you have to say thank you for, because they accommodated 30 plus people very well for lunchtime. Then you head up into Clapton, which is the heartland of where the O's played in them days, and he then points out where the pitch was and everything like that. And then there's more history all along the way. And it's a 10-mile walk, and you know you've done it at the end. And the last little bit is on Leibridge Road, where the stadium used to be, which was next to the railway tracks. So, but very informative. And a little footnote on this one, that Steve became a granddad again midway through the walk, so he kept us quite entertained with that. So congratulations, Steve, of and your wife Karen are becoming grandparents again, which is, it was a nice touch on the day, because Steve soldiered on in Steve Jenkins style. And yeah, thank him. Well, we always thank Steve for all the things he's done for the historical part of the O's, to be honest.
Brilliant. Well done to Steve and congratulations. And I must thank you, Trevor and Lee, for a good chat as ever. Thanks to Andy on his double shift today, and to Karen Harrison for getting the podcast out. Thanks above all to you for listening, much better than just sitting here talking to ourselves. And we're continuing right through the summer months with interviews and news and chat. So enjoy the break and all those stress-free Saturday afternoons. And until the next time, up the O's.
They sign up to pump, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane, that's the wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10 and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. There's flats in every corner of the ground, you can get your kids in just £5, get an Orienteer. It's only a quick, get a cup of tea, but there ain't no lids, cos it's an Upton pub. It's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane, that's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10 and your girl, we're rocking all over the world again. We had an FA Cup 78, we had John Sear, that is most irate. We were club reviver, but we don't care. We had checkered shirts, we had Chris Tate's hair. I remember the moment that Lee Spill scored. I remember it's done on the message board. I remember the pleasure, I remember the pain, and I wanna hear rocking all over the world again. This ain't Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane, that's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10 and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. This is St. Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane, that's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10 and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world. Till the end, if I thought you'd score, but I haven't seen a goal in God knows when, and I wanna hear rocking all over the world again. Cos this ain't Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane, that's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10 and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. Cos this ain't it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane, that's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10 and you're going
on the hour across Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.